Welcome back to the Line of Fire, our special guest host, Dr. Frank Turek.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Ladies and gentlemen, Frank Turek with you. I've been on the program before with the great Dr. Michael Brown. Dr. Brown coming back from Singapore as we speak. He's on an aircraft from Japan to Atlanta. In fact, he emailed. It's amazing to me. I was emailing him earlier today, and no more than a minute after the email went out, I get an email back from him. He goes, "Hey, man, I'm on a plane right now. I'm over the Pacific." I'm going, this technology is absolutely amazing. And he actually recorded a little message from the plane you're going to hear in just a minute. Anyway, what we're going to be talking about today in the first hour, and I know all you don't get both hours, but the first hour we're going to be talking about rights. Where do our rights come from? If there is no God, does anyone really have any rights? We're going to talk about that. Second hour, we're going to talk about why science needs God. Yeah, I said that right. Why science needs God. So let's get right into the rights issue. Rights. Where do our rights come from? In fact, Chris Cuomo over there on the Communist News Network, CNN, said in his discussion with Justice Roy Moore that he said, our rights come from man. That's why I call it the Communist News Network, by the way. Our rights come from man. If rights come from men, then we don't have rights. We have preferences. And he tried to say that our rights come from men, not realizing that our country's founded on, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Look, if there is no God, nobody has a right to anything. Everything is just a matter of opinion. It's just your opinion against, say, Hitler's opinion. If there's no authority beyond humanity. Now, atheists predominantly today are materialists. In other words, they believe all that exists are the hard physical stuff of the periodic table, material things. This is why atheist Richard Dawkins, who wrote the book The God Delusion, said this: the universe we observe has precisely the properties one should expect if there is at the bottom no design, no purpose, no evil, and no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. If materialism's true, Dawkins is exactly right, although he has no grounds to think he's right, because if materialism's true, he shouldn't believe anything he thinks, because every thought he has is a result of his dancing DNA. It's not the result of his mind. It's the result of molecules in his brain colliding with one another, and that's it. So why should he believe anything he thinks? But anyway, that's a fundamental problem with materialism. But you know what? Dawkins actually acts like he doesn't believe that, because he recently affirmed that a woman has the right to choose an abortion and asserted that it would be immoral, that's his words, immoral to give birth to a baby with Down syndrome. Now, according to Dawkins, the right to choose is a good thing, and giving birth to a Down syndrome children is a bad thing. Well, question, Dr. Dawkins, which is it? Is there really good and evil, or are we just moist robots dancing to the music of our DNA? And here's the other issue. Atheists, like Dawkins, are often ardent supporters of rights. What? Rights to abortion, same-sex marriage, taxpayer-funded health care, welfare, contraceptives, and several other entitlements. But who says these are rights? By what objective standard are abortion, same-sex marriage, same-sex adoption, taxpayer-provided health care, and the like? Why are these moral rights if there is no God? There's no such standard in a materialistic universe of atheism. So atheists must steal the grounds for objective rights from God while arguing that God doesn't exist. That's the ironic thing. And I'm taking this from my new book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. And we're going to see how they steal from God and why there are no rights at all unless God exists when we come back from the break. You're listening to The Line of Fire, normally with Dr. Michael Brown, but I'm filling in today, Dr. Frank Turek. My website, crossexamined.org. That's cross-examined with a D on the end of it, .org, back in just 2 minutes. Don't go away.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Michael Brown coming back from a great period of meetings in Singapore. He'll be back here tomorrow. You're listening to Frank Turek from crossexamined.org. I've written a few books. One of them you may have heard. It's called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. The new one is called Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. And I'm actually speaking from that book right now as we speak. We'll get to your phone calls a little bit later at 866-34-TRUTH, 866-34-TRUTH. We're talking about the fact that there are no rights unless God exists because everything's just a matter of opinion. And atheists who say everything's material obviously have no immaterial standard to appeal to say that there is a moral right to anything. Now, I'm not saying that you have to believe in God to be a good person or that atheists are immoral people. Some atheists live more moral lives than many Christians. I'm also not saying that atheists don't know morality. Everybody knows basic right and wrong, whether they believe in God or not. In fact, that's exactly what the Bible teaches. In Romans chapter 2, Paul says, the Gentiles who do not have the law written on their hearts. Everybody knows basic right and wrong. Now, the Bible may give you more details in certain areas, but you don't need the Bible to know basic right and wrong. Everybody already knows it. So I'm not saying that you have to believe in God to be good. I'm not saying atheists don't know morality. What I'm saying is atheists can't justify morality. You see, atheists routinely confuse knowing what's right with justifying what's right. I mean, they say it's right to love, and I agree, but why is it right to love? Why are we obligated to do so? The issue isn't how we know what's right, but why does an authoritative standard of rightness exist in the first place? Why does it exist? I mean, you can come to know about right and wrong in many different ways. You know, your parents, your teachers, society, your conscience. And you can know it while denying God exists. But that's like saying you can know what a book says while denying there's an author. Of course you can do that, but there would be no book to know unless there was an author. In other words, atheists can know objective morality while denying God exists, but there would be no objective morality to know unless God exists. Now, here's the problem for atheists. Atheists are caught in a dilemma. If God doesn't exist, then everything's a matter of human opinion and objective moral values don't exist, including all the rights that atheists support. Same-sex marriage, abortion, whatever it is. If God does exist, then objective moral rights exist, but those rights clearly don't include cutting up babies in the womb, same-sex marriage, and other invented absolutes contrary to every major religion and, of course, the natural law. Now, an atheist might say, look, in our country, we have a constitution that the majority approve. We have no need to appeal to God. Yeah, well, that's true. You don't have to appeal to God. You don't have to appeal to God to write laws, but you do have to appeal to God if you want to ground them in anything other than human opinion. Otherwise, your rights are mere preferences that can be voted out of existence at the ballot box or at the whim of an activist judge or dictator. And in fact, as you know, we've got this case coming up with regard to same-sex marriage. It's been argued. It's going to be decided now. And they're going to have to decide whether or not the 14th Amendment requires the states to redefine marriage. That's really the issue. I mean, I read the entire transcript of the arguments from last week, and you ought to read them. It's quite interesting. Obviously, these justices are very smart, and they know to ask the right questions. Whether they're liberals or conservatives, they always ask good questions. And so it was an interesting give and take there. But I noticed that a lot of them got talking about the social science behind marriage and all this. While all that's important, that is not a question for a court. The court shouldn't be deciding policy questions. The court is deciding whether or not same-sex marriage or genderless marriage, actually, because when same-sex marriage is put into place, there's not two types of marriage. There's not same-sex marriage and natural marriage. Marriage as an institution becomes genderless. That is why Justice Roberts rightly pointed out, he said, you're not looking to join the institution, as he said to the folks who were for same-sex marriage. He said, you're not looking to join the institution, you're looking to redefine it. And that's exactly right. Because that's what would happen. marriage would become genderless. Now, that creates a number of problems. If marriage is genderless, it has no connection to children. And when we have no connection to children through marriage, we have more kids born out of wedlock, and it creates a big disaster for society. And that's what the pro-natural marriage side was arguing, the side that said we ought not change the definition of marriage, or the court ought not force the states to do so. That's what they were arguing. Now, both sides are arguing about social science and all this, social science research, and all that's interesting, and it all could be true or false, but the court isn't there to decide whether same-sex marriage is a good thing or a bad thing. The court is there to decide whether the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution requires the states to change the definition of marriage. And for a number of reasons, it's obvious that the 14th Amendment does not do that. I mean, first of all, when the 14th Amendment was passed, every single state had homosexual behavior as a felony. So if the 14th Amendment was intended to require same-sex marriage, then every state in the union intended to throw the new couple into prison as soon as the marriage was consummated. That's obviously not the case. Now, some might say, well, who cares what they believed in 1868 about homosexuality? We've evolved since then. Yeah, well, that's really not the issue. The issue isn't where we stand now. The issue is, what does the text of the Constitution say? In other words, if you want to change the Constitution, that's why we have an amendment process. But you don't just jump in there and say, well, these words can mean whatever they want. Laws and words have specific scopes and meanings. They don't have unlimited flexibility, as some liberal justices tend to think. Neither the intent nor the text of the Constitution requires the states to redefine marriage. If the people of the United States have evolved on the issue, then the Constitution provides them with a very clear and legal way for the document to intelligently, quote unquote, evolve. They need to convince a supermajority of the federal and state legislators to amend the Constitution. That's the very reason our Constitution has an amendment process. If we don't do that, we no longer govern ourselves. If justices can decide, just nine people can say, well, look, this is the way it's going to be, then we no longer govern ourselves. We're not a country of laws. We're a country of justices or judges who tell us how we're going to govern ourselves. So if you want to change the Constitution, go through the amendment process. Now, back to the original point. The original point here is that without God, there are no rights to anything. And even if the Constitution says you have a right, again, if somebody comes along and says you no longer have a right, or we vote to get rid of that right, then how is that a right? It's a mere preference. In fact, I had a debate just a couple of weeks ago with Dr. Michael Shermer. He's an atheist. And we were arguing over this issue of morality. You can see the debate on our website for free, crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it.org. And just click on the blog there. You'll see the debate. And my point to him was, look, as an atheist, you have no way to ground any objective morality at all. If we're just molecules in motion, there is no such thing as morality. Everything is a matter of opinion. And in fact, he tried to say, this is really weird, he tried to say that the Declaration of Independence, when it says endowed by their creator, really meant evolution. Even though evolution didn't come along till about 100 years later, 80 years later, it was really a bizarre way to argue. Anyway, you can see the debate for yourself. The point here is that without God, there are no objective rights. In fact, there's no right to same-sex marriage without God, and there's no right to natural marriage either. In other words, no matter what side of the political aisle you're on, no matter how passionate you believe in certain causes or rights, without God, there aren't really rights at all. Human rights amount to no more than your subjective preferences. So atheists can believe in and fight for rights to abortion, same-sex marriage, taxpayer-provided entitlements, but they can't justify them as truly being rights. In fact, to be a consistent atheist, and now this is going to sound outrageous, but it's true. To be a consistent atheist, you can't believe anyone has ever actually changed the world for better. Objectively good political and moral reform is impossible if atheism is true, which means you have to believe that everything Wilberforce, Lincoln, and Martin Luther King did to abolish slavery and racism wasn't really good. It was just different. Why? Because you have no standard outside of yourself. It means you have to believe that rescuing Jews from the ovens was not objectively better than murdering them. It means you have to believe that gay marriage is no better than gay bashing. I mean, after all, if we're just dancing to our DNA, the gay basher was just born with the anti-gay gene. You can't blame him. That's why the whole born that way argument doesn't work. And it means you have to believe that loving people is no better than murdering them. Now, you got to be thinking, hey, that's outrageous. Racism, murder, assault, and rape are objectively wrong. And people do have a right not to be harmed. Look, I agree. But that's only true if God exists. In an atheistic universe, there is nothing wrong with anything at any time. There are no limits. Anything goes, which means to be a consistent atheist, you have to believe in the outrageous. Now, if you want more on this, this is all in my new book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. In fact, Dr. Brown had me on talking about this a couple of months ago. We didn't get to this material, but if you're interested, check it out. And if your bookstore doesn't have it, it just means they're sold out again. No, not really. You can go to crossexamined.org and get it, or go to Amazon, and we'll be back in just 2 minutes with more. I'm Frank Turek, filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown, who will be back tomorrow. Don't go away.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Ladies and gentlemen, Frank Turek with you, filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown, who's actually on an airplane right now all the way from Japan. Actually, he's coming from Singapore, went to Japan. Now he's heading to Atlanta. He's over the Pacific right now. And if I'm not mistaken, I think we could probably get him to call in. Let's see if Dr. Mike or Brown can call in. Can you play Dr. Brown's little clip there? Joey, go right ahead.
Hey, just a quick word from yours truly. I'm in flight right now. You can hear the cabin noise and everything. I'm in flight from Japan to Atlanta, then Atlanta to Charlotte. It's like a 13-hour flight. I already had a 7-hour flight from Singapore to Japan, but meetings were wonderful, thousands in attendance, a great impact by God's grace. Thank you for praying. Thanks to all my great guest hosts, including Frank Turek. Can't wait to be live with you again tomorrow on the Line of Fire.
That is Dr. Michael Brown from, 38,000 feet over the Pacific. Technology is amazing, isn't it? Anyway, he is... He'll be back tomorrow, and I'm sure he'll have a lot to say about what he was doing over there in Singapore. And he's got a new book coming out in September. He sent me an advance copy for an endorsement. It is going to be very good. I can't wait for that to come out. And I won't spill the beans on it just net yet, but it's going to be a great one. And it's about a year anniversary from tomorrow, I think, his book, Can You Be Gay and Christian, came out, which is a fabulous book. I don't know if you've seen that one. If you haven't, you need to pick that one up, Can You Be Gay and Christian? And it kind of melds into what we're talking about here today. We're talking about rights and where do our rights come from. And again, if there is no God, there's no rights to anything. Yet I see people out there in the public square arguing for this right and that right when they're atheists. Again, they can know they have rights. They actually do have rights. They just can't justify why they have rights if there is no God, because our rights actually come from God. And as you know, and by the way, if you want to join the conversation today, gee, I forget to give out the number. It's 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. 866-348-7884. That's a toll-free line if you'd like to join the conversation today. We're talking about rights. Where do they come from? Why do we have them? Governments are instituted among men, according to the Declaration of Independence, to protect rights, not to give them, not to take them away, because of men. Give you your rights, then they're not rights, they're preferences. And which man gives them to you? Mother Teresa or Hitler? See, they've got to be grounded in a standard beyond humanity, and that's what we mean by God. When atheists say they have rights, but they claim there is no God, they're actually stealing from God while they're arguing against him. You know, one other thing about the 14th Amendment, we were talking about it before the break with regard to this same-sex marriage issue. And the 14th Amendment was intended to prevent states from discriminating against newly freed slaves. And at that time, you know, blacks and women didn't even have the right to vote. Yet no court ever thought it could use the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment to change state voting laws. So why do district courts think they can use it now to change state marriage laws? Are we to believe that equal protection, the equal protection of the 14th Amendment, does not guarantee a woman's right to vote, but it does guarantee a woman's right to marry another woman? I mean, that's basically what the court would say if they said the 14th Amendment requires the states to redefine marriage. You know, we actually amended the Constitution to recognize a woman's right to vote and blacks' right to vote. The 15th Amendment recognized blacks' right to vote, and the 19th Amendment recognized women's right to vote. Those were passed in 1870 and 1920. Yet the 14th Amendment was passed in 1868. And nobody said the 14th Amendment gave blacks the right to vote or women the right to vote. They had to amend the Constitution. So how could anyone possibly say the 14th Amendment requires or somehow gives a man the right to marry another man or a woman the right to marry another woman? It can't. Yet if the court rules that way, that's actually what we're going to get. And as I stated before, it is not the court's job to state whether or not a particular policy is a good or bad policy. It's the court's job to see if a particular law is constitutional or not. Actually, the court has given them that right. It's not in the Constitution that the court would have the final say. We're supposed to have three co-equal branches of government. But in any event, that's what they've given them the right to do. They've given them themselves the right to do. And I think it's quite obvious the 14th Amendment does not require anyone or any state to redefine their marriage laws. And by the way, despite all this talk about equal rights, everyone already has equal marriage rights. Every person has the same equal right to marry somebody of the opposite sex. That law treats all people equally, but not every behavior they may desire equally. If people with homosexual desires do not have equal rights, then people with desires to marry their relatives or more than one person don't have equal rights. You see, the court needs to acknowledge the fact that natural marriage and same-sex marriage, incestuous marriage, polygamous marriage, are different behaviors with different outcomes. So the law rightfully treats those behaviors differently while giving every citizen the equal right to participate in marriage, whatever its legal definition is. Everybody puts limits on marriage. People who are for same-sex marriage don't think polygamous marriage should be allowed. They don't think incestuous marriage should be allowed. They don't think bisexuals should be able to marry two people of different sexes. No, they think marriage is for them, it's down to two. Well, why two? Who said? Look, if there is no God, if there is no natural law out there, then again, everything is a matter of opinion. And if everything's a matter of opinion, there are no rights to anything. In fact, if we discover what marriage is, then it's a right. If we invent what marriage is, then it's a preference, not a right. So we discover what marriage is. Why? It's based on the biological reality of nature, or the biological realities of men and women. They come together and can do what neither of them can do individually together. They create new life, and then they nurture that new life, hopefully. That's why you have marriage, to perpetuate and stabilize society. It is not... Marriage in our society is not to recognize that two people love one another. It is there to perpetuate and stabilize society. And the only relationships that can do that are between a man and a woman. You say, well, not every man and woman who gets married has children. True. But the only ones that do have children are a man and a woman. At least naturally, anyway. And they're the only ones that can both mother and father a child. That's why it's best to promote natural marriage alone, because it's the only relationship that can procreate and then nurture children best to adulthood. In other words, we can perpetuate and stabilize society through natural marriage. We can't do it through any other type of sexual relationship. That's the reason that natural marriage should be promoted while other sexual relationships should not be promoted. And nobody's rights are being violated when you say that. Everybody has the same right to engage in natural marriage if they want to. If they don't want to, I don't think they can, their rights are not being violated. They have the same opportunity as everybody else. And again, without God, none of these are rights anyway. We're all just dancing to our DNA, as Richard Dawkins said. And there is no right to anything. There's no good or bad. There's no justice or injustice. We're just dancing to our DNA. Well, I think that worldview is false. I think materialism is false. I really think there is a God, and he has endowed us with certain rights. And we'll talk more about them after the break. I'm Frank Turek. All this is from the book Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. We're back in just 2 minutes for Dr. Michael Brown. See you then.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Ladies and gentlemen, Frank Turek with you this half hour. Dr. Michael Brown is over the Pacific as we speak, heading back to Charlotte, North Carolina, where I am, by the way. Dr. Brown and I have known each other for many years. He's a wonderful guy, wonderful ambassador for the Lord, as you know, for those of you that have listened to this program. And he does great work. And by the way, this is listener-supported radio. Money needs to be raised to have Dr. Brown on the air. So if you go to thelineoffire.org, I think you can donate there. And please do. We do. Because what Dr. Brown does is very important. And this radio program is a beacon of light in a very dark world with Dr. Michael Brown. So please, if you can, please consider donating to the Line of Fire. I know he doesn't probably talk about this very much on the air, but I thought since I'm filling in, I'd mention it. Now, for those of you that didn't get the first half hour, we've been talking about the idea that rights come from God, and without God, there are no rights. There are no rights if there is no God. Everything's a matter of opinion. It's just your opinion against, say, Hitler's opinion. If there's no standard beyond humanity, everything is a matter of human preference. And that creates a problem because there are people out there in the political world who are claiming that they have a right to this and a right to that, while at the same time claiming God does not exist. No, everything is a matter of preference without God. And, you know, part of the problem here is that sex is the new religion in America. It's been an old religion, I know, but it's the new religion in America. And unfortunately, it's a religion of the sword. I mean, that's been the real reason there's been controversy recently in Indiana a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, whenever it was. You had a determined vocal minority from the religion of sex bullying and cutting down traditionalists who need a law that would allow them to be left alone. This is a class of orthodoxies that has opposing values, and there are moralists on both sides demanding their rights. One side says everyone must celebrate my same-sex marriage, which is a moral position, and the other side says God or my conscience prevents me from doing so. That's also a moral position. Can anyone see any middle ground here? One side says you must celebrate. The other side says, look, I can't. No, there's no middle ground. So the only question is whose moral right, quote-unquote, will take precedence? Whose moral right? And that's why there are these religious reformation or religious protection reformation acts going around, because governors are realizing that people who have certain religious beliefs are under attack. The scales have tipped against the free exercise of traditional religion, against the right of Christians, Muslims, Jews, and anyone else who can't celebrate the orthodoxy of the new religion of sex. Now, friends, forget tolerance. This is well beyond tolerance. Now, if you don't agree to celebrate certain things like same-sex marriage, believers in the new religion of sex will commence an inquisition and without trial punish you for heresy. That's why the legislation, these religious reformation acts are necessary, because florists, bakers, photographers, real estate agents, internet CEOs, and even speakers like myself have all discovered personally that the people who say they're fighting for tolerance are often the most intolerant. In the name of inclusion and diversity, those of us who have a diverse view are being excluded and even fired and fined because we won't violate our beliefs. To satisfy the overbearing clergy of the religion of sex. By the way, this is an article, I'm reading from an article I wrote recently called Sex is the New Religion. And you can see that on our website, crossexamined.org. It's also on stream.org. You guys know about the stream? Stream.org? Check out stream.org. Great website. New Christian website by James Robeson and Jay Richards. Just has some great material on it. Check out stream.org. Let me make sure that's right. It's the stream or it's stream.org. Let me be clear on this. It is, stand by for vectors, Victor. Come on. It's coming up. Gee, I have a slow internet connection today. It is stream.org, just stream.org. And let's get to your phone calls after the break. We'll get right into it at 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I'm Frank Turek, filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown, who will be back tomorrow. Check out our website, crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it, .org. Back in two.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Ladies and gentlemen, Frank Turek with you of crossexamined.org. Wrote a couple of books, in fact, on this issue of same-sex marriage called Correct, Not Politically Correct, How Same-Sex Marriage Hurts Everyone. And we've been talking about rights today, where do moral rights come from. And Dr. Brown will be back tomorrow to talk more. If you'd like to be on the program, however, 1-866-34-TRUTH, 1-866-34-TRUTH. We're going to go to the phone lines right now, and we'll start in Raleigh, North Carolina, the capital of North Carolina, with Justin. Justin, you're on with Frank Turek on the Line of Fire. Go right ahead, sir.
Hi, Frank. I'd like to say it's an honor given this opportunity to talk to you, because I've watched your debates on YouTube, and I just finished reading your book, Stealing from God. It was, to say the least, it was fairly interesting. But I'm actually here playing devil's advocate, kind of trying to make a counterpoint to your argument about God being an objective source of morality.
Mm-hmm.
Before I get into anything, I actually like to ask, which God is our source of objective morality? Is it the Christian God or the Hindu God? Or the Muslim God, which God in particular is responsible for our morality?
That would be my first question. Yeah, excellent question, Justin. Actually, you just need a theistic God to be the ground of objective morality. In other words, a God beyond the world whose essence is goodness, that his very nature is good. And now I think it turns out to be the Christian God, but like in the Declaration of Independence, they didn't identify the God as the God, necessarily the God of Christianity, but a theistic God. It's interesting in the Declaration of Independence, Justin, that although some will say that Jefferson was a deist, he didn't write a deistic document, because in the Declaration of Independence, you have creator, creation, God-given moral absolutes. You also have a supreme judge of the world, a day of judgment, and divine providence. None of those things are deistic. They're all theistic. So you just need a theistic God. Now, as I say, when you look at the evidence, I think it turns out to be the God of the Bible. But you just need a theistic God to have rights.
Okay. So, but here's the problem with your answer. You've mm-hmm. just given credence to all the other gods out there. By saying that all you need is a theistic God, you've given credence to, you've made all the other gods come off valid, and which is a problem, because Christianity professes that Jesus Christ is the only Lord, the only living being, our, the only living God. So when you mention that you only need a theistic God, you're kind of taking a pluralistic or all-inclusive approach, which is generally frowned upon by the evangelical movement. But
that's Justin, hang on. You asked the question, what do you need to have morality? And I'm saying you need a theistic God. But I'm saying that theistic God is the God of the Bible. What I'm saying is Allah doesn't exist. I'm saying the Hindu gods don't exist. I'm saying any other type of God doesn't exist, because there's only one God.
But these other people that practice these other religions observe morality.
Everybody knows morality. Let me go back to your previous point, Justin. You don't have to believe in God to know morality. Atheists know morality. You don't have to believe in God. In fact, the Bible even teaches that. It says you don't. It says the Gentiles are not of the law written on their hearts. And this is why Jefferson said these laws are self-evident. You know them, even though you might not know where they come from.
That's a very good counter. I like that counter. Now, let me ask you this. When you say our morality comes from God, define your idea of objective morality. What does objective morality constitute of? Because if you say the objective morality comes from a God, and it also happens to be the Christian God, if you look in the Bible, there are a lot of things that are defined as moral that we don't practice, or we can choose to ignore these days, that are more or less sort of questionable.
Why don't we just use one example, and then we'll go from there. So go ahead, Justin.
Okay, so for instance, there are some laws that are not very popular. I'll take one that's really obscure at the moment. So in the Bible it says one should not eat animals like shellfish or shrimp or, you know, random little creatures that we normally find to be delicate, to consider a delicacy in Italian restaurants. That's one.
Okay, excellent. Justin, let's just stay on that one because that's a good one. It's a good one to bring up. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Commands change, but the values behind the commands do not change. So, for example, the command, say, don't eat shellfish, is based on a value from God, which means be separate or be holy. And in the Old Testament, the Old Testament was designed to deal with the theocracy being Israel. And the idea was Israel needed to be separate from the other nations because through Israel, the Messiah would come that would save everybody from other nations if they put their trust in him. And so God had certain laws in the ancient Near Eastern culture that no longer apply today. They're based on the value, be separate, but they are no longer in play because we no longer have a theocracy. Now, the command was don't eat shellfish, but the value was be separate. We do the same thing today. For example, you might say to your child, don't play in the street. Why? You value their life, right? But when they get older, you're going to say, get out in the street and go find a job. The value is the same. You love them, but the command has changed based on the circumstances. So commands do change, but values behind the commands don't change because the value is derived directly from God's nature.
All right. So, but here's the problem. It's very easy to kind of decide which of these commands, just maybe because they're obscure, and then you decide, okay, this particular command has changed, but the value is the same. How do you decide whether this explanation should not apply to love thy mother and love thy father, thou shalt not kill? Why only apply this explanation to the obscure rules that are not very mainstream in the Bible?
Yeah, excellent question, Justin, because in the New Testament, for example, Jesus himself does away with the Old Testament dietary laws in Mark chapter 7. It's also done with Peter. I think it's in Acts chapter 10. These laws no longer are necessary. In fact, Jesus says it's not what goes into you that defiles a person. It's what comes out of you that defiles a person. So it's explained in the New Testament that these dietary laws no longer are binding on anyone. And of the Ten Commandments, 9 of them are repeated in the New Testament. There's only one that isn't, and that's keep holy the Sabbath, which deals with the theocracy. Because you don't have to keep holy the Sabbath anymore because the Sabbath was designed for rest, whereas today our rest is in Christ. You see, the Sabbath was just a symbol of the rest we have in Christ. So the Sabbath is no longer in place, but the other 9 commandments are, okay? Hey, Justin, I got to move on to other calls, but it's been an excellent call.
Of course.
Call back. Thank you so much. All right, let me go to Victoria in Charlotte, North Carolina. Victoria, you're on with Frank Turek, filling in for Dr. Brown. Go ahead.
Hi, Frank. I've seen you online, and I've learned so much. So thank you so much for all your knowledge. I've really learned a lot. I just wanted to ask, I've been hearing a lot of different sermons to help, you know, a Christian understand, you know, about the homosexuality problem, the issue today. And I just have a question. I heard one sermon recently, and I didn't know if you could help expound on another way that's more that is practical, because you're a real practical arguer. You know, you make a lot of things make sense the way you explain them.
My wife doesn't think so.
Well, that's another debate, right? I was going to say that what I heard a pastor recently say that it was actually, I think, Pastor J.D. Greer. He said that part of looking at it in another way is that. You actually were talking about being holy and separate, and
right.
That if you compare yourself just as a person, this is what it was. He said that actually comparing yourself, identifying yourself on sex in any way, whether you're straight or gay, is the wrong thing to do. Because he said if you're a single person, he said if you are identifying yourself only in Jesus, whether you ever get married, whoever you're attracted to, as long as you stay holy, that's a good thing. Whether you're attracted to men or women, whatever you are, he said, you need to be focused on the Lord. And I thought that was so interesting. I don't know, is there any way you can expound on that just to make that a deeper connection for me
way? Yeah, I would say I'd agree with that. And the other aspect I'd say about it is this. When we are being asked to compromise what we know are biblical and moral law standards in order to love people. It sounds compassionate, but it's not compassionate. It's false compassion. Instead of trying to help people, what we're actually doing is we're saying that sex is more important than God. That's what we're doing.
Okay.
That's what we're doing. We're saying that because you have a certain sexual desire, that takes precedence over what God has created and what God wants for you. God is not a cosmic killjoy. He's not out there trying to take away your enjoyment. He's trying to put you in the right environment so you can enjoy life better by knowing Him. And that's more important than anything else we do here on earth. So we're actually engaged in false compassion. True compassion is this sin, like other sins, will hurt you. We can't encourage you to go down that road. Not only will it hurt you, it may keep you out of the kingdom forever because it's hard to get out of certain sins. Anyway, thanks for the call, Victoria. I'm out of time. You're listening to The Line of Fire with Frank Turek, filling in for Dr. Michael Brown, who'll be back tomorrow. Check out our website, crossexamined.org. Back in two.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Ladies and gentlemen, Frank Turek with you, filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown, who will be back tomorrow. He's on a plane right now, coming all the way back from Singapore. And we're talking about these issues of rights. Where do they come from? They come from God. If they don't come from God, they're not rights. They're just mere human preferences. And we were talking a little bit about the same-sex marriage issue and marriage in general. And for that, let's go back to the phone lines. And by the way, if you want to call in, we got a few minutes left. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Let's go all the way on up to Maine, where Travis is. Now, Travis, are you listening on radio or are you listening via the internet?
Oh, I'm listening on the radio.
Oh, excellent. Well, how are you doing up there? How are things up there in Maine? Are the maniacs okay up there?
You know, everything's going great up here. It's actually sunny, which is a change. I don't
know. Oh, that's nice.
To be this way for long, but it is sunny. I just wanted to call up. I wanted to talk about the new law about homosexuality being the law of the land from state to state. But before I get to that, I wanted to comment on some people that also called in. That one individual was talking about God's law changing, and I just wanted to say that God's law never changes, and that those laws that were mentioned to the people of Israel, that didn't change because they were mentioned to the people of Israel. It's not like God told us those laws and then came to us again and told us, no, that's not right. Those were for those people, and these were for us. So I wanted to share that, and I also wanted to share about the Sabbath is that we are to keep the Sabbath holy. Just the Lord gave us information that it is to, you know, we can work to do good. So I just wanted to share that. But anyways, back to the legality of homosexuality, I just wanted to state that there's been a whole lot of people actually suing bakers and photographers for not being part of their gay marriage.
Right.
And I just want to say that this is not discriminating against anyone that's homosexuality. In fact, these people serve these people. If you go, if you do research, these bakers that don't have signs out front that says we will not serve homosexuals, but they do draw the line at being a part of their ceremony.
Right.
Because that in itself is taking away from the civil rights of the Christian, that now he has to be a part of a pagan ceremony, which he does not want to be a part of. It's not like he's refusing service. He's refusing to be a part of their ceremony.
That's absolutely right, Travis. And America has a long history of successfully balancing a variety of religious and moral beliefs with other interests. I mean, think about this. When military service was involuntary, in other words, when we had a draft, we still made room for conscientious objectors who did not want to carry weapons. Now, if we can allow people to exempt themselves from defending the country, which is the most important responsibility our government has, then we can certainly allow people to exempt themselves from performing same-sex wedding ceremonies.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they realize this, but what they're doing is they're saying that Christians can no longer be bakers and they can no longer be photographers, because if they are, they will have to abandon their faith so that they can be a part of these pagan non-Christian weddings.
Right.
To force someone to be a part of something that they don't want to do is completely different from serving customers. To be actually there where people are taking an oath to whatever God that they choose to, going against what God tells us to. It's really shocking that so many people have seen this in the news and no one's really come out to say that.
Well, yeah, I know. The Alliance for Defending Freedom, ADF, is behind it, is behind defending these people. And what I like to ask, Travis, and I got to move on to another call, but I appreciate the call. I like to ask the friends on the other side of this issue. I said, should a Muslim caterer be forced to do a same-sex wedding? Should a Muslim T-shirt maker be forced to print gay pride T-shirts?
I mean, or those should a Muslim T-shirt wearer be forced to, attend a Christian wedding?
Or how about this?
A Muslim T-shirt wearer be forced to say that, you know, killing Allah makes me closer to God or something, you know, that offends them.
Right, or should...
They wouldn't do that, but it seems like now that the, you know, Christians aren't aggressive, they don't believe in killing people for their religion, it seems like there's a lot of people that just seem to enjoy pushing them.
Well, yeah, and I think a man who is a homosexual who runs a printing business shouldn't have to print up, say, anti-gay marriage flyers, too. I think it goes both ways. Anyway, I got to run, Travis. Thanks for the call. Let me squeeze Tom in from Des Moines, Iowa. Tom, you're on with Frank Turk. We just got 2 minutes, so go ahead, Tom.
Well, Frank, I actually met you when you were in Omaha. You signed my book, and I shook your hand and said, I'm sorry I can't come back tonight, but I got to meet with my cousin, and he's really lost. And
how'd that go?
I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, how'd it go?
You remember me?
Yeah, how'd it go?
Well, I don't know. I think I might have put a rock in his shoe, gave him some things to think about. But, it's tough sledding. He's just immersed in the, you know, do what feels good to me now thing, let everybody do their own thing.
Tom, remember the key question you got to ask anybody who's not a believer. If Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? If Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? Ask that question, see what he says, because if he says no or he hesitates, the problem is not just in his mind, it's in his heart. He doesn't want it to be true. And by the way, friends, those of you just listening, we have an app that has all these kinds of questions in it that you need to get, the Cross-Examined app, two words, Cross-Examined. You can go to our website, crossexamined.org, and get it. We've had almost 60,000 people download the app, so they find a great use to it. Anyway, Tom, go right ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I got an emergency call coming in, but thanks, Frank, for all you appreciate.
All right, thanks so much, Tom. Tom had to go, but yeah, check out the Cross Examined app. That's two words, Cross Examined. You can get it at the App Store. You can get it at the wherever you get Droid apps or Windows apps, and it's also on our website, crossexamined.org. That is. A place where you can get the app. You can get a whole bunch of other resources up there for free. And you can check out the book I've been talking about here today, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. Travis is exactly right. There's a problem going on out there in our country today, and that is that we're losing our freedom of religion, our freedom of expression. And you know whose fault it is? It's not really the people on the other side of this issue. It's our fault. It's Christians' fault. It's our fault because we have not been engaged. We have not been out there defending rights or even rights to preach the gospel. That's going to go away if we're not diligent, if we don't get involved. This is why when people say to me, well, Christians ought not be involved in the political process at all, I go, oh, really? Why don't you go to North Korea? Can you preach the gospel in North Korea? No, you can't. Why? Because politically they've ruled it out. Why don't you go to some of the countries I've been to? Iran, Saudi Arabia, China. Can you preach the gospel legally in those countries? No. Why? Because politically they've ruled it out. Politics affects everything we do, friends. Now, I'm not saying this is our number one goal in life, but it is important. Because the rules that are made in Washington, the rules that are made in your state government, the rules that are made in your local governments affect almost everything you do every day. And it even affects your church. It affects just about everything we do. And if we're not involved, if we're not engaged in those areas, then we're going to lose our rights to even preach the gospel. And if you think preaching the gospel is important, then you better think politics are important. Again, it's not our number one goal, our number one interest. But it should be of interest, because if it's not of interest to us, then our rights are going to be taken away. And our rights come from God, but they can be taken away by people. That's why Jefferson said governments are instituted among men to secure rights. Anyway, friends, been great being with you this hour. I'm Frank Turek, in for the great Dr. Michael Brown. I'll be back tomorrow. Check out our website, crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it, .org. And for those of you here for the second hour, we'll talk about why science needs God.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Our special guest host, Dr. Frank Turek.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I wish I was Michael Brown. He's a lot smarter than I am. You're listening to Frank Turek on the Line of Fire program. I'm filling in for Dr. Michael Brown. I've been on the program before with Dr. Brown and have filled in for him on occasion. I've written a few books. One of them you may have heard of called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Wrote that with Dr. Norman Geisler. Also wrote a new one called Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. I'm going to be speaking from that this hour and get to your phone calls as well. The phone number is 888. That's my radio number. I have a radio show too. I'm sorry. It's 866-34-TRUTH. 866-34-TRUTH. And if you'd like to be on the program, today we're going to talk about science and why science needs God. Yeah, I said that properly. Science needs God. And the first question I want to ask is this. What does science say about God? And in order to do this, I want to go back 20 years. 20 years to the O.J. Simpson trial. Can you believe it's been 20 years since the O.J. Simpson trial? For those of you who are about 20, you're going, who? O.J. Simpson, the former NFL great who was accused of murdering his ex-wife and her boyfriend. And there was a trail of blood from the crime scene out there in California. Let me just give you some of the evidence presented at trial, and then I want to ask you a question. First of all, Simpson's blood was at the crime scene, and there's only one in 170 million chance it's not Simpson's. Secondly, the two victims and O.J. Simpson's blood was in Simpson's white Bronco. Remember the white Bronco, the low-speed chase across the L.A. freeways there? All the blood of Ron Goldman, Nicole Brown Simpson, and O.J. Simpson was found in that white Bronco. The glove at the scene had blood from all three and matched the glove at Simpson's house. You remember from the trial when Johnny Cochran, Simpson's attorney, said if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. Well, the glove didn't fit O.J.'s hand because it was saturated in dried blood. Number four, the bloody footprints from the rare brand of size 12 shoes that were found at the scene. Those bloody footprints were from shoes that Simpson owned. And there was only 199 pairs of those shoes sold in the United States, and Simpson had one of them. And then finally, number five, Nicole Brown Simpson's blood was on O.J. Simpson's socks, and there's only a 1 in 21 billion chance it was not her blood. In other words, Nicole Brown Simpson was probably the only person in the history of humanity to have that blood. Now, question. In light of all this evidence, does science, this is all scientific evidence here, does science show that O.J. was guilty? Be careful how you answer. Does it show that O.J. Simpson was guilty of the crime? Let me go back through the evidence again. There's only a 1 in 170 million chance that Simpson's blood found at the scene was not really Simpson's. They found the two victims and Simpson's blood in his Bronco. The glove had blood from all three and matched the glove at Simpson's house. The bloody footprints were from a pair of rare shoes O.J. had, and Nicole Brown Simpson's blood on Simpson's socks was found, and there's only a 1 in 21 billion chance it was not her blood. Question, does science show O.J. was guilty? You know what the answer is? The answer is no. No? What? It's not because I think O.J. was innocent. In fact, I think O.J. actually did it. But science doesn't show he was guilty. Why not? You're going to find out right after the break. Don't go away. You're listening to The Line of Fire with Frank Turek filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown, who will be back tomorrow. Check out our website, crossexamined.org, crossexamined with the D on the end of it, .org, back in just 2 minutes.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's not Dr. Michael Brown. It's Dr. Frank Turek with you. Filling in for Dr. Brown. I'll be back tomorrow, and you won't want to miss it because he's going to be talking about some very, very influential meetings I think he had in Singapore with thousands of people. So you're not going to want to miss tomorrow when Dr. Brown is back. Today we're talking about science and how science needs God. And before the break, I was talking about all the scientific evidence that seemed to point directly to O.J. as being the killer in the O.J. Simpson trial. And I asked the question, does science show he was guilty? And I answered the question, no, it doesn't show he was guilty. Now, why doesn't all that overwhelming evidence show that O.J. was guilty? Why doesn't science show that? Because here's the key point, friends. Science doesn't say anything. Scientists do. You see, all data needs to be gathered and then interpreted. And science doesn't do that. Scientists do that. People do that. So when people say science says this or science says that, say, no, it doesn't. Science doesn't say a thing. Scientists say things. Now, they may be right, don't get me wrong. But what I'm saying here is Christians are often bullied when people say, science says we evolved and there is no God. Science says X, science says Y, science says Z. Nonsense. Science doesn't say a thing. Scientists do. And the question is, why do they say what they do? Sometimes what they're saying is not based on the evidence. Now, when you look at all that evidence for the O.J. Simpson trial, I think you come to a conclusion that it looks like, yeah, O.J. was guilty. But you have to make that interpretation. Science doesn't do it for you. Science, if done properly, may give you the data, but then you need to look at the data and see whether or not, A, the data is good, and then, B, whether the data points more toward his guilt or his innocence. In fact, in 2004, 10 years after the murders, NBC News did a survey, and there was about almost 1,100 people they surveyed. And they found out that 77% believe Simpson was guilty. But there was an ethnic divide. 87% of whites thought Simpson was guilty, but only 29% of blacks thought he was guilty. Now, why did these people come to opposite conclusions looking at the same evidence? I think the evidence, or the split, I should say, is most likely due to different worldviews. Given our country's history of racism, blacks were understandably more apt to believe the case was racially motivated. They'd seen it themselves in other situations. Maybe they had been discriminated against, whereas whites didn't have that experience. So when whites look at the data, they go, yeah, he's guilty. Blacks look at the data and go, wait a minute, this could be racially motivated. In fact, they thought that when they look at the evidence, that maybe the LAPD framed Simpson. You see, because science doesn't say anything scientists do. Maybe the scientists working on it were immoral and they framed him. Or maybe they had some kind of racism against him. Or maybe they measured the blood wrong. They thought that maybe Simpson was innocent, that this was racially motivated. Now, you have the same data, but two different conclusions. Why? You have two different worldviews. So science doesn't say anything scientists do. Now, what does this have to do with science and God? What it has to do with is, as I mentioned, you always hear atheists saying, well, look, you know, science shows that you have no need for God. Whether it's evolution, whether it's quantum vacuums, whether it's the multi-universe, or all these things atheists come up with to try and avoid God. But science doesn't say a thing about any of those things, because science doesn't say anything scientists do. You have to look at the data and come to a conclusion. Now, just like you had an ethnic divide on the O.J. Simpson trial, you have a worldview divide when it comes to theists and atheists. theists, when they look at the data, are open to maybe God being a cause, whereas atheists are not open to it. Why? They philosophically ruled out intelligence before they look at the evidence. It doesn't matter how much the evidence points to God, it can't be God. Why? Because they've already decided he doesn't exist. They have a worldview against him, a philosophical bias against him. Now, I think when you look at the scientific evidence for the beginning of the universe, which shows that space, matter, and time had a beginning, I think the obvious conclusion is that there must be a spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful, intelligent, personal cause that created the universe. Because if space, matter, and time had a beginning, the cause can't be made of space, matter, and time. In other words, the cause must be spaceless, timeless, and immaterial. And that's exactly what we mean by God. I think that's the right conclusion. Now, science doesn't say that. What science gives us is data that we can evaluate and say, oh, yeah, it looks like the universe had a beginning. Okay, what do we do with that then? What do we do with the fact that the universe had a beginning, that space, matter, and time had a beginning? Well, we have to come to a conclusion. We have to draw an inference. Well, there must be a cause out there, a cause that's spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful, personal, intelligent, in order to create the universe. That's exactly what we mean by God. So strictly saying, science doesn't say a thing about God. But when you look at the evidence you can get from science, you can put that evidence into an argument that says, yes, God does exist. Yet atheists, when they look at the evidence, instead of saying, well, there must be a God out there, they come up with something like the multi-universe theory. And they say there's just these billions of universes out there, and somehow we just happen to be in the one that looks designed. Of course, that doesn't help them. Why? Because even if there are other universes out there, all of them together require an absolute beginning. Even the top proponent of, one of the top proponents of the multi-universe theory, his name is Alexander Vilenkin, at Tufts University, admits that. He says, look, even if there are the other universes, the whole show needs an absolute beginning. So you don't get rid of the need for a beginner when you have other universes out there. So they look at the data, and by the way, there's no evidence for a multiverse. They're just making it up, it seems, to avoid God. And many have admitted, yeah, this is our only other possibility. You know, atheists are fond of saying, you don't believe anything you can't see, hear, taste, touch, or smell. And then they come up with a multi-universe that they can't see, hear, taste, touch, or smell. Wait a minute. You can't have it both ways. Of course, you believe in a lot of things you can't see, hear, taste, touch, or smell, like the laws of logic we're using right now. You can't see, hear, taste, touch, or smell those. They're immaterial laws that we use to communicate and understand one another. So, in any event, the point here is that science doesn't say anything scientists do. Next question I want to deal with. And by the way, if you want to join our conversation a little bit later, you're listening to The Line of Fire with Frank Turek filling in for Dr. Michael Brown. Our phone number is 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. And if you want more of what I'm talking about here today, this is all from a new book I've written called Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. And by the way, stealing from God is not about tithing, okay? Not that there's anything wrong with tithing, but I'm not talking about tithing in the book Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. So the first question we just dealt with was, what does science say about God? Nothing, because science doesn't say anything scientists do. The second question is, can science disprove God? And the answer to that is no, because science doesn't say anything, scientists do. But you always hear atheists saying, oh, yeah, you know, we can disprove God, or some of them say that. But to say that a scientist can disprove the existence of God is like saying that a mechanic can disprove the existence of Henry Ford. Let me say that again. To say that a scientist can disprove God or can disprove the existence of God is like saying that a mechanic can disprove the existence of Henry Ford. You can study a Model T engine all you want. You will never disprove the existence of the creator of that engine. It's impossible. And the more you know about that engine should not tell you anything about denying the creator of that engine. In fact, the more you know about it, the more you may go, wow, this guy was pretty smart. This guy was certainly a creator and an intelligent one. And that's what we have people doing today. The more we learn about the way the natural world works, for some reason, people think that somehow proves the non-existence of the creator and sustainer of the natural world. How does learning more about a Model T engine somehow tell you there's no creator of that engine? In fact, my friend John Lennox has a great question he asks his students. He says, suppose you have a Model T in front of you, a Ford Model T. What accounts for the Ford Model T? I'm only going to give you one choice, but I'm going to give you two possibilities. You can only choose one. Is it Henry Ford or the laws of internal combustion? And the students go, wait, Dr. Lennox, you need both. And he says, exactly. You need Henry Ford to create the engine or the Model T, and then you need the laws of internal combustion to allow it to work, to operate. Now, why can't atheists see this? That you can learn as much as you want about the natural world. You can figure out ways to use technology and invent new technologies. That is never going to disprove the existence of a creator of the universe and the natural laws that allow us to use technology or create technologies. It's never going to disprove that. Yet somehow atheists think as we advance in technology, somehow we're getting rid of the need for God. Nonsense. Anyway, we're going to talk more, friends. You're listening to The Line of Fire with Frank Turek, filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown, who will be back tomorrow. And we're talking about the book Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. We're back in 2 minutes. Don't touch that dial.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Frank Turek with you, filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown. I'll be back tomorrow. By the way, our website's crossexamined.org and Facebook, Dr. Frank Turek, Dr. Frank Turek, T-U-R-E-K. If you like us there, you'll get our posts. And you've done that well with Line of Fire. Got like I think 100,000 on Line of Fire. That's just fabulous because Dr. Brown is a great ambassador for Christ. Check out us too at crossexamine.org and also Dr. Frank Turek at crossexamine.org is on Facebook as well. We're talking about science right now and why science needs God. And if you'd like to join the program a little bit later, it's 866-34-TRUTH, 866-34-TRUTH. And we're answering the question, can science disprove God? The answer is no. And one of the confusions here, by the way, is that there are two types of science. There's empirical science, which studies the present, you know, how things operate. You know, you put two parts hydrogen with one part oxygen, you always get water. You go to the lab and do this over and over again, you're always going to get water. But then there's another type of science called forensic science, which studies the past. And that deals with not how things operate, but how things originated. Like when you're looking at the O.J. Simpson trial and the murders there. That's a forensic science. You can't go back in the laboratory and repeat everything. You can't bring those people back to life and witness the murders over and over again. You've just got to look at clues left behind. And this is a key point here when we're talking about science and God. Because as we advance technologically, we're advancing in the realm of empirical science, where we can do things over and over again and we can create these new technologies and create computer chips and all sorts of medicines and these kind of things that make our lives better, help us live longer and have a, you know, live a more comfortable life. And you know, atheists and Christians aren't arguing about those issues. You know, there's not different theories of, you know, how electricity powers your computer between atheists and theists. There's not different theories on, you know, what medicine kills a particular disease or helps you with a particular disease than any other, or, you know, between Christians and, say, atheists. Nobody's arguing really over empirical issues. What we're arguing over are forensic issues, issues of history, origin issues. And the problem is that atheists are often using the prestige of empirical science, technological advances, to cover what they're saying when it comes to forensic science. Questions of where did the universe come from? How did the first life begin? Where did subsequent life forms come from? They are using the prestige of empirical science, and they're trying to say what we say about origins is also true because, you know, we're right about how to kill, or, you know, how to live longer because of medicines. And we're right about, you know, look at all our computer advances and all this. But the two things are completely different. Empirical science is not the same as historical science. Just because we know, you know, how to create faster computers doesn't mean we know where the universe came from. Or there's a naturalistic explanation for that. Or there's a naturalistic explanation for where life came from. Or there's a naturalistic explanation for where subsequent life forms came from. So they confuse the two, and they use the prestige of empirical science to tell us how or where we came from. And quite frequently what they're doing is they're just smuggling their materialistic worldview into their conclusions. So when they say we all evolved without intelligent intervention, that's just materialism. That's not necessarily what the evidence says. That's just saying, well, we've already ruled out intelligence, so it can't be God. It can't be an intelligent person out there. So let me deal with the third question. What does science say about God? Nothing, because science doesn't say anything scientists do. Can science disprove God? No, science can't disprove God any more than a mechanic can disprove the existence of Henry Ford. Now, the third question is the serious question. Does science need God? Or more, the most serious question, does science need God? And the question is, absolutely. Why? John Lennox and Richard Dawkins were debating. You can see their debates online. Lennox a Christian, Dawkins an atheist. And Dawkins kept talking about the laws of physics can do this and the laws of physics can do that. And somebody in the audience actually asked Dawkins this question. Dr. Dawkins, where do the laws of physics come from? And Dawkins said, well, I have no idea. But bringing God into it doesn't help. Well, actually, I think bringing God into it does help. You ever ask yourself the question, why are the laws of physics so orderly and consistent? Why do they do the same thing over and over again repeatedly? Why can we build a rover here on Earth, launch it, put it on a planet, Mars, 60 million miles away, and do it with precision? Why? Because we can depend on the laws of nature to do it. They do repeatedly and consistently over and over again. Why do they do that? Where did they come from? It seems to me there's a mind out there that's holding all this together. Physicist Paul Davies, who teaches at Arizona State University, had an article in the New York Times back in 2006. The article was Taking Science on Faith, and he was asking the question, why are there orderly natural laws? And Davies said this, scientists take their orderly natural laws of physics on faith, and that those laws are all expressed as tidy mathematical relationships. And then he says, over the years, I've often asked my physicist colleagues why the laws of physics are what they are. The answers vary from, that's not a scientific question, to, nobody knows. The favorite reply is, there is no reason. They are what they are. They just are. Well, I have a question, friends. And by the way, when Davies asked this question, he said his email box was filled with vitriol from atheistic scientists. Why? Because he's asking a question they ought not be asking. Why are the laws of physics so, why are they there? Why are they so consistent? Because there's a mind out there that set them up and keeps them consistent. In other words, there's a God, a being, a super intelligence who is pure actuality. He has no potential in him. In other words, he is completely maxed out in power and intelligence in every one of his attributes. And he is the being that created the universe and sustains the universe. He didn't just create it and leave it. He's holding it up right now. Like, for example, why do the planets reliably orbit the Earth? Or I should say the sun. We thought they orbited the Earth. We were wrong. Why do they orbit the sun consistently? Why don't they stop and go or go in herky-jerky ways? Or why aren't they randomly? Because you say, well, there's a law like gravity, Frank. Yeah, I go, why is there a law like gravity? Why is gravity consistently doing what it's doing? Why does an acorn always become an oak tree? Is it conscious of becoming an oak tree? No. Why does it always become an oak tree, not an elm tree, not a birch tree, not a seahorse? Because it's programmed to become an oak tree. Well, is an acorn conscious? No. Well, then how does it know to become an oak tree? Why does it become an oak tree? It doesn't know. It just does. Because there's an external intellect directing it to become an oak tree. The external intellect is holding the laws of nature together, holding the laws of physics together. This is, by the way, what is called final causality. I explain it in depth in the book Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. When atheists are trying to do science, they're relying on a goal-directed universe. They're relying on goal-directed laws. They're relying on the laws of nature to be goal-directed. Well, if they're goal-directed and they're not conscious themselves, there must be an external intellect directing them. That's what we mean by God. In him we live and move and have our being. You're listening to Frank Turek on the Line of Fire for Dr. Michael Brown. Go to our website, crossexamined.org, for more. And we're back in just 2 minutes. Don't touch that dial.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Ladies and gentlemen, Frank Turek with you back. Filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown. And this is amazing. I just got an email from Dr. Brown. He says, I'm nearing Atlanta now and heard the last minute of your talk. Acorns and oak trees. He's listening online. Dr. Brown, if you can hear this, say something else. Send me an email again. I mean, this is now here's an example of technology, right? Why can he, being on an airplane from Japan, email me and it, at the speed of light, I can get an email from him. And we can converse. This is mind-boggling when you think about it. Now, this is all empirical science, right? These are repeatable laws that continue, consistent laws that continually do what they do. The speed of light doesn't change, you know, electromagnetic radiation we can rely on so we can communicate. I mean, there's no wires going to his plane, right? I mean, he's up there. He's sending me this message. And I can hear him, and he can hear me. Why is that? Because there's a mind out there that's holding all of this together. And the laws of nature themselves are goal-directed. Now, if atheism's true, if we're just material machines and there is no immaterial reality, nothing's goal-directed. There is no purpose. We just dance to the music of our DNA. Now, actually, when Richard Dawkins famously said, we just dance to the music of our DNA, that should have tipped him off, because DNA is goal-directed. In other words, the longest word ever discovered is your genome. It's 3.5 billion letters long. It's a computer program. And as Bill Gates himself said, DNA is like a computer program, yet it's far more complicated than anything we've ever created here at Microsoft. Now, where I come from, wherever there is a program, there must be a programmer. Wherever there's a code, there must be a coder. Wherever there's a message, there must be a messenger. Natural laws and objects in nature are goal-directed. If that's the case, there must be an external intellect directing them, because these things are not conscious. The planets are not conscious. An acorn becoming an oak tree is not conscious. So how does it know what to do? It's programmed. And this is why Paul says, when he's up there at Mars Hill in Athens speaking to the Athenians, first of all, he says the true God does not dwell in temples built by human hands. Now, if you know anything about Athens, as he's standing there on Mars Hill, right behind them is a big temple built by human hands on the Parthenon to the god Athena. That's where you get the word Athens from. So here he is saying, look, I know you guys think that the gods are, they dwell in temples. They don't. The true God doesn't. And he actually quotes from a Cretan philosopher by the name of Epimenides, who said, in Zeus we live and move and have our being. But what Paul does is he applies it to Christ. And he says, in Yahweh we live and move and have our being. In Jesus we live and move and have our being, the true God. And in the book of Colossians, he says, Christ holds all things together. Do you ever think about that? Do you ever think about that? Right now, Jesus is holding you together. He's holding the natural laws together that allow you to be held together. We would go out of existence if God took his hand away from you and the universe. And so in order to do science, there has to be these consistent laws that we rely on and use to try and discover cause and effect. That's why science needs God. Without God, we wouldn't be able to do science. Why? Because if the laws of nature weren't consistently goal-directed, and they must be goal-directed by an external intellect, in order to be goal-directed, we couldn't do science. Science relies on orderly natural laws. And again, this is all in the book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. So if you want to go into more depth, you can. And we'll get to your phone calls right after the break at 866-34-TRUTH. 866-34-TRUTH, 348-7884. I'm Frank Turek, filling in for Dr. Michael Brown. Back in just 2 minutes.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Ladies and gentlemen, Frank Turek with you of crossexamined.org. In for the great Dr. Michael Brown, who will be back tomorrow. In fact, he's about to land in Atlanta. I just got an email from him. He's coming all the way back from Singapore, so he'll be back tomorrow. And you don't want to miss that program because I know he's going to have a lot to say about what was going on over there in Singapore. Dr. Brown is such a valuable asset to the body of Christ that they call him all over the world to speak. And so you don't want to miss that program. Okay, today we're talking about science and why science needs God. Yes, because there would be no natural laws without somebody creating and sustaining them. And that's what science relies on, that goal-directed nature. And God is the being who sustains all things. In fact, let me put it this way. God is to creation what a band is to music. If a band begins playing music, the band is creating the music and it's sustaining the music as it plays. But what happens to the music the second the band stops playing? The music is over. Well, the same thing is true with God. If God were to stop holding the universe together, sustaining the universe, we'd go out of existence. So God isn't just a creator and then he leaves the universe. God is a creator and a sustainer. There has to be a cause right now sustaining the universe. Let me explain this a different way. And again, this is all explained in the book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. Let's say right now you're having a thought, and you are. You're having a thought. You're having a free will thought. You're driving down the road, you see a tree, you go, hey, that's a pretty tree. Or you see a car in front of you, whatever, hey, that's a nice car. You're having a thought, right? A free will thought. Or you're thinking about something else. Hopefully you're thinking about what we're talking about, but I know you can think about a lot of things while I'm talking. Anyway, you have this free will thought. Why are you having that free will thought? Well, you are a person who has a mind, not just a brain, and you've decided to have this thought. But in order to have this thought, the neurons in your brain must operate properly. And what makes the neurons operate properly? Well, the atoms that comprise your neurons have to operate properly and consistently. Okay, but what keeps the atoms operating properly and consistently? Well, the natural forces of nature have to be operating consistently in order for the atoms to do what they do. What are the natural forces of nature? There's only four of them. There are only four we know about anyway. Gravity, the electromagnetic force, and the strong and weak nuclear forces. Those are the only four forces we know about. Why are they doing what they're doing? If you think about this long enough, you realize you can't go on an infinite regress. You're ultimately going to have to get to a self-existing, completely actualized intelligence that's powerful, that creates and sustains all this, that sustains the natural forces, which sustain the atoms, which sustain the neurons, which allow you to have a free will thought. In other words, we're not going back in time trying to figure out what the first cause was, although God is the first cause. We're going down, if you will, right now, at the present time, to see what's underlying all of reality that we know about. And when we look around, we see that things are goal-directed, that nature's goal-directed. Well, there must be an external intellect goal-directing it then, and that's what we mean by God. Now, Aristotle thought of this long before Jesus showed up here on the earth as a human being, and he called it final causality. It's also been called teleology. And when you have a thought, that's called intentionality, that you're intending to go in a different, or to think about a certain thing, or go in a different direction, or answer a question a certain way, or go in a particular direction on the road, wherever you're driving, you're intending to go there. Well, these things are also sometimes called goal-directedness. And the entire world is goal-directed, which means there must be somebody directing it. So science itself needs God. All right, now if you want to be on the program and talk about any of this, we can take calls on other subjects too. Call us at 866-34-TRUTH, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. You're listening to Frank Turek, filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown on the Line of Fire. Let's start in, well, Steve's on the road somewhere, but we'll go with Steve. Steve, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, sir.
Yes, Frank, thanks for having me on the air. And I'm just about 85 miles south of Salt Lake City on Highway 15 and having a nice day and enjoying your program.
Well, thank you, sir.
I'm a person who was raised Catholic. I'm still a Catholic. I'm a strong Catholic. I speak out for what I believe is good about the Catholic Church, and then I have some comments about what I in the areas where I think they can use some help.
Right.
As you know, being raised Catholic, I didn't have a strong Bible upbringing, but we did read Scripture, and we professed Scripture from the altar during Mass. And but we are not what you'd call Bible thumpers. The church is getting into that area a little bit more than they used to. But I have some questions about the Bible, and I think that is exactly what you're talking about: is my free will, my mind, my atoms, my neutrons, my God-given talents allows me to have those thoughts.
Right.
So here's my question, and I believe a lot of goodness is in the Bible, and I know folks believe it is the absolute, positive, without a doubt, Word of God. Mm-hmm. It is the sanctifying grace of God that those words are in print. So then when I speak about issues like gender, mm-hmm. I'm going up to Salt Lake City to answer a federal charge for harassment because I had the audacity to speak gender to the VA hospital women. I'm a veteran, Purple Heart. I'm a patient. I'm a citizen. They're government employees. They went ahead and did the Sharia thing on me, saying, you better not talk about things that we don't feel comfortable about. So I'm in court tomorrow.
Wow. What's the issue, Steve? Can you get into it?
Yeah. I told these people that the voicemail from the VA in St. George, where I live, is a woman. It's an older woman. She can't speak very well. She's not professional. She thinks she speaks of suicide. And I told these people, I said, by the time I'm done listening to her, I'm thinking about suicide. You know, so then one thing led to another, and I said, 82% of your customer base is men, but yet I'm always dealing with women. Mm-hmm. And then when I speak about the difference between men and women, you have me up for a criminal charge.
How could it be a criminal charge, Steve? I don't understand.
It's harassment. They're coming in tomorrow, and I have the testimony from the prosecutor's witness list, and they're saying that they were offended, and what I was saying is rude.
And okay, but Steve, there's a difference between being rude and being criminal. I mean, everybody can be rude on occasion. I mean, we're going to lock people up for being rude.
I hear you. I hear you. And I'm not hiding or holding anything back.
Right.
There was no foul language. There were no threats. It was only a matter of me professing to them that I think men are better equipped with pragmatism and therefore a better person to be able to orchestrate and conduct, engineer, and perpetuate public policies at the VA. And it could be that all the women who are in charge, who have become arrogant and vindictive, because I've been told that by many people there at the VA, you know, because of affirmative action power mentality. And they don't want to hear it, Frank. And they've charged me with this.
Yeah, it's an odd charge. It must be an odd charge. I don't know if I agree with you that, because it's kind of a blanket statement that men would be. I mean, there's some men would be better and some women might be better,
well,
but
yes,
still.
Here's my. Yes, and here, are you there, Frank?
Yeah, I'm here. It's just odd that this would be a charge.
Here's my question. Here's my biblical question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. In 1 Timothy, chapter 2, verses 9 to 15, it says women should never, ever, 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 ever be in charge of public policy making, and that men should dominate that area, that arena.
No, I think he's talking about in the church. He's talking about the fact that a woman shouldn't be, have the head authority over a man in church. I don't think he's talking about in policy out there in the world, because as you know, Steve, in other areas in the Bible, women did take a prominent role, particularly even in the Old Testament with like the judges, Deborah, and there are Aquila and Priscilla. There's people in the New Testament that have a role. They just didn't have authority necessarily over a man when a man was available. If there was no man available, then the woman took charge.
Well, that's not the way I understand it, and that's not the way I've read the introduction to the chapter. And and somewhere before that, it does say as the church is being formed and being formulated, but churches are made of people.
Yes.
Okay. The congregation.
Hey, Steve, hang on. Steve, we're coming up to a break, so if you can hang on, I'll hold you through the break here, and we can continue the conversation.
That's where my God-given gift is at today.
All right, hold on, Steve, hold on. We're going to come back. You're listening to Frank Turek filling in for Dr. Michael Brown here today. If you'd like to join the conversation, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-34-TRUTH, back in 2 minutes.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Dr. Frank Turek back with you. Dr. Michael Brown will be back tomorrow, just coming back from Singapore, so you don't want to miss that program. And today we're talking about science, and we also got off on another issue, and I'm going to bring Steve back on here in a minute. Steve brought up the issue of 1 Timothy 2 about women in the church, and obviously there's a lot to be said about that issue. But I'm reading here from my co-author's book. Dr. Norman Geisler and I wrote a book called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Well, he wrote another book. He's written a lot more books than I have. Another book called When Critics Ask. It's sometimes called The Big Book of Bible Difficulties, and there's a long section in the book about this passage. And here's what he says in here. This is very interesting. He says, whatever Paul may have meant by the women be silent passages, he certainly did not mean that they should have no ministry in the church. This is clear for several reasons. For one thing, in the same book of 1 Corinthians, Paul instructed women on how they should pray and prophesy in the church, namely in a decent and orderly way. Further, there were also times when all the men were to be silent as well, namely when someone else is giving an utterance from God. Finally, Paul did not hesitate to use women to assist in ministry, as is indicated by the crucial role he gave to Phoebe in delivering to its destination the great epistle in Romans. He goes on to say, when used in context, the silence passages are not negating the ministry of women, but are limiting the authority of women. Paul asserts that women were not permitted to have authority over a man. Likewise, he follows his exhortation to keep silent by reminding them to be submissive. Of course, men were under authority and needed to submit to the headship of Christ over them. Indeed, the ultimate proof that there is nothing degrading about being submissive is that Christ, who was God in human flesh, is always submissive to the Father, both on earth and in heaven. And he goes on to say much else. In fact, men and women are equal in all regards, in essence. They have different functions, different roles. Christ had a different role than the Father did, and he was submissive to the Father. And if Christ can be submissive to the Father, we can be submissive to others here on earth. Now, that doesn't mean that we do everything somebody tells us, because if you're in a marriage and there's a husband-wife marriage and the husband tells the woman to do something that's immoral or illegal, the woman shouldn't do it. Notice that Christ or the Father never asked Christ to do something immoral. And you shouldn't ask anybody, if you're a man, you shouldn't ask your wife to do something immoral either. So those submissive passages are actually yanked out of context a lot to get people's ire up. And the silence passages, I think, are misinterpreted as well. But let me go back to Steve, because Steve is involved in a – let me see if I can get it back on the air. Steve, you're –
Hello.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're going to court now because you said – they said you – I mean, what's the charge, Steve? You were offensive? You were rude? What's the charge here?
Well, I was speaking to the women at the Veterans Hospital about a certain issue. One is that the one particular department continued to ignore me. It was eligibility. Uh-huh. And then I had some comments about a female voicing the voicemail, which was slow, monotonous, unprofessional, and you know, why not have a man do it when they are when they're dealing with 82% of their customer base is male.
Okay,
and
okay, that's
I was saying I think you got a woman on there for political correctness, and that's it.
Well, okay, who knows, but okay, that might have been offensive to them. I can see that, but why is that a crime? I'm still trying to figure this out. How is that a crime? What charge are you being brought up with?
Because the breadth and definition, the breadth and scope of these laws have been broadened so much these days, Frank, mm-hmm. that you really have lost your First Amendment rights of
free
speech.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's feminism. And that's women and feminism and social services and at the VA. And so that's why I'm asking, you know, did the Bible really say that these women should not be in secular public policy making roles because of their gender? I'm thinking, yeah, maybe so. Look what social services has done to America.
Yeah, okay, but
Hillary Clinton might do to America.
But Steve, I mean, even if the Bible did say that, the Bible is not the handbook for the United States government. So even if the Bible did say that, because the government does a lot of things the Bible says don't do, like pay for abortions, what we're doing now. The government's doing that. I mean, the Bible says obviously
exactly
is pro-life,
right, Frank.
But
this
we're paying
point.
For abortions now.
But we have for since 1973, and people fail to look at the infrastructural root problems that cause the root causes that make these problems.
Yeah,
maybe
you know,
because these women are in charge of these policies.
Well, Steve,
they're steering the ship into the rocks.
Yeah, Steve, let me say I'm not going to blame the one of the two genders for all our problems here. I wouldn't say it's women's problem.
Nobody does, Frank. That's the deal. Nobody
does. You know what the real problem
is? You get called names, you see. You Steve, get called Steve, misogynists.
Steve, you know what the...
Maybe this is what Timothy had in mind.
I don't think he did. But let me just say this, Steve. The real problem is the church. The problem is not people outside. Obviously, people outside the church are creating problems. Don't get me wrong. But if the church would be the church, and when I mean the church, I mean all believers everywhere. I don't just mean the Roman Catholic Church or the Protestant. I'm just talking about all believers everywhere. If the church would act like the church, if people would act like true Christians and be involved and be salt and light, we wouldn't be having these problems as badly as we're having them. If the country's messed up, it's our fault. It's not the people
Frank,
in the VA. It's our fault.
I understand. I understand, sir. But here's the issue, is that Shakespeare said the general's general is the general's wife. How many men are at home listening to this? They're saying, yeah, right on, Steve. But if I speak that way at home, I sleep on the couch.
Well, okay. Part of the problem, you're right. Part of the problem that we have when it comes to man-woman relationships is you're right that there is this hyper-feminism that's out there. And part of the problem for that is because men have not been biblical leaders. We have not treated our women like Christ treats the church, sacrificing himself for her. And so women have been frustrated with that.
These women deserve to be treated royalty these days the way they act. I mean, these women, age 20 to 30, they talk like drunk sailors. They're all tattooed up. And they're the largest growing segment of prison and jail inmates.
Well, they might be, Steve, but let me
biblically?
No, let me point out the reason that there many of them are like that way, at least partially, is because their daddies didn't love them. That's part of the problem.
Because the feminists kicked them out because dad came home one day having a bad day. The mom has been brainwashed to call 911 when that happens, and all of a sudden the slippery slope is there, and dad's gone. The kids are raised by the mother.
Well, Steve, Steve, I got to go. We're about out of time, but you got a lot going on there. I hope your case goes well, but thanks for calling in. But the problem here is we're the problem. We haven't been salt and light. And obviously, I'm not going to blame entire gender for all the problems in our country. We're the problem, though. We have not been doing what we should be doing, and we need to get back to that. And we need to get back to being salt and light is what I mean. Anyway, we started talking about that moral issue there, but if you want to go back to the science issue or the issue we talked about in the first hour on morality, where our rights come from, check out Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. And thanks to Dr. Michael Brown, he'll be back tomorrow. You don't want to miss it. Thanks, friends. I'm Frank Turek from crossexamined.org. Hope to see you again sometime on this program. God bless you. See you.